to the Creative Pen Podcasts. I'm Joanna Penn, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options, internet sales and promotion for your book. The companion website is www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone, this is Joanna Penn for the Creative Pen Podcast, and today I'm interviewing Kirk Biglioni. Kirk is a new media consultant, a writer and technologist. In addition to his extensive internet experience, Kirk has also worked in radio and the music industry. He is the principal at Oxford Media Works, co-founder of Media Lopa and partner at Quartet Press. Hi Kirk, how are you?
I'm great, Joanne.
Oh, well, thanks. Good to be here. Thanks for coming. And so could you start off for telling us a bit about you and about your background?
Sure. I have a background in more traditional media. I kind of started my career in a pre-web era doing radio, working for trade publications in the music industry, artist management, that sort of thing. And I kind of jokingly say, or it's not really a joke, it's the truth. I was just waiting for Tim Berners-Lee to invent the internet. and once that happened, things kind of took off. I kind of took to it very quickly and have been working on the web, doing web development and web publishing ever since the mid-90s.
Wow, that's brilliant. And you talk a bit there about web development. So, you know, we are going to have a bit of a technical spin to this conversation, and it's something that I'm interested too. So you talk a lot about ebooks and DRM. I wondered if you could give us your thoughts on the kind of the next 6 to 12 months in the ebook world, because there's so much going on. And I'm not asking you to be a futurist, but, you know, what do you think's going on?
Well, there is a lot going on. There's a lot going on with digital media in general, and we've seen that over the last 5 years or so as every form of media has moved digital. We've seen it with music, we've seen it with movies, we've seen it with television, and now it's happening with books. And it's kind of interesting that books are easier to digitize, and ebooks have been with us for over a decade. So you would think that ebooks would have gotten popular sooner, but for any number of reasons, they didn't. And now I think we're at a point where we've seen a convergence of not only some interesting new technologies that have reached a point where they can be adopted by mass market consumers, but also the publishers seem to be more open to distribution. And the technology companies seem to be, you know, more open to creating devices, creating marketplaces, creating new ways for people to discover and read books. So it's a very interesting time. And in some ways, the publishing industry has finally stepped into the limelight of digital media after kind of being in the background while all of these other industries have transformed. So now we've got, obviously, you know about the Kindle, and we've got the new line of Sony readers. Those are exciting. We're seeing estimates of as many as 1 million Kindles sold, which is a lot for a device like that that still is relatively expensive and specialized. And also we're seeing that the people who are buying those, of course, are, if you're going to pay $300 or $400 for a reader, you have to be pretty committed. So these tend to be voracious readers who are buying a lot of books. And so I think what we're seeing and what we'll see over the next 12 months is a surprising shift in the sales numbers of books from print to digital. Because the readers who are adopting digital are the ones who buy more books. And this, I think, is going to spur probably even more innovation in the area, hopefully more innovation, more new experimentation with different kinds of devices and platforms. We're looking at Google doing some interesting things. I don't know if we want to get into the whole Google book search arrangement.
I don't know if you've
been following that.
I have been, but it's so contentious.
It's very contentious, and everyone has a different perspective of it. It could have a huge impact on the publishing industry, but it's subject to a hearing in November, and it's not set on whether or not it will be ratified by the court. So one way or another, there will be a decision on that in the next year, within the next 12 months, and either way, that's going to have an impact on what direction the publishing industry goes. And then there's this whole Apple thing. Everyone is waiting for Apple to put out a device.
Yeah.
And, I find it amusing that publishers who see maybe Amazon as being too aggressive or hostile towards their interests by forcing prices down, you hear that a lot.
Yeah.
Or Google, they're upset with Google for scanning without asking for permission. They're all looking to Apple to be their savior, I think, as if Apple will come in with a new platform and suddenly everyone with ebooks will migrate over to the Apple. I think the future is going to be many different platforms. I don't think it's going to be one device. There are so many different scenarios that you can read in. It could be on your phone. It could be on a dedicated device. It could be in a web browser. It could even be on your TV through a web-connected box. So there are just going to be more ways to discover books, more ways to acquire or buy books, and more ways to read books.
Mm, which is good news for everybody, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah. More for the readers, more for the authors, more for the publishers who embrace it.
who embrace it and don't resist it.
Mm.
And the challenge then is with all these new different channels to get your work out there, you really need to not only to keep on top of all of them, but you're competing with everyone else who's doing it as well. So you need to be a little bit more aggressive with your promotion and marketing if you're an author trying to be discovered. With all of this opportunity comes a lot of competition.
Yeah, and out of that, I've got a couple of questions. I guess, you know, one thing for me, I'm in Australia. A lot of my, you know, the people who come to my blog are from other countries other than America. you know, in Australia, we don't even have a Sony reader. I think the only one we get is the Iliad. We certainly don't have the Kindle. Do you know anything? And I've emailed people, you know, I've said, hey, God, you know, even Scribd.com, you know, you can now publish ebooks. You can't publish there if you're not American. And this frustrates, you know, the hell out of me. Digital books, they should be global, right? You know, do you know anything about this? What's going on?
So you don't even have the Sony, the 505 that doesn't have the internet connection. The new one that they announced last week was wireless.
No, I've been to the Sony shops. I've called them and said, you know, e-reader guys, you know, no, nothing. We don't have anything. We can buy them overseas and then hack them. But, you know, what's the point?
Do you know anything about this?
That's what I wanted to ask.
There are a few things going on here. With the wireless device, like the Kindle, part of the problem is they need to make deals with a wireless carrier. And I've heard that there have been some regulatory concerns. In the United States, they would deal with an agency called the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission. And apparently it's not as easy to get the same kind of approval for that kind of wireless device in other countries. That's what I've heard. I don't know specifically, but that's just one component. The other thing is that the model, you see a little bit of this in music. I don't know if you have seen eMusic as an example. It's a subscription music service and you would log in and they have a huge collection of music from different record labels. And you'll get territorial restrictions where the album you want to download is not available in your country. You can see it, but you can't download it because they have no license to release it. Traditionally, creative products have been licensed by country. And so it is kind of challenging if you don't have a license for the territory to release a product that's supposed to be consuming content that is licensed by territory. So it could be a challenge where the territorial rights for Australia or whatever country you're talking about are such that the publishers or whoever owns the rights in that region have not licensed for digital release, which is unfortunate. And that's something I think that as more content goes digital, we need to begin looking at global licenses or at least licensing by language. It would make sense for a book. We'll acquire the digital rights in English, global, worldwide. And then if someone wants to acquire the Russian rights or some other language, they would have the global rights for that language. So that's one approach that could be taken. But it's frustrating for consumers, and it ultimately, if there's something that's going to slow down the adoption of a technology that people are kind of naturally excited about, it's the inability to obtain content. And in your case, I guess the inability to even get the device.
Yeah. Or to publish in America, which I consider a market for my own work, which I'm happy to license anywhere.
That surprises me that Scribd won't allow that you have to be a U.S. citizen to post content. And that could have something to do with concerns over piracy or people from other countries posting content they may have the right to post in their territory that they don't have the right to post in the United States. There was an issue with the Kindle last month where some book had shown up. It was 1984. It was George Orwell.
Yes, that's
and
the one.
Then it was pulled back. People who had bought 1984 for their Kindle found that it had vanished.
Yes.
And it was public. I think it was public domain. The book's gone into the public domain in Australia, but it's not in the public domain in the United States yet. So there are these, not in addition to territorial rights, there are different copyrights and different terms for length of copyright from country to country. So that's another challenge that needs to be worked out.
Mm.
No, Google has all these public domain books that they're just releasing. They just made a deal with the Cooler Reader people, which I think is, they're British. I don't know.
You might be able to get the Cooler Reader
in Australia. I don't know. But they're now making a deal with Google over EPUB. Google's releasing a bunch of, like, a million books in the EPUB format for mobile readers. And but the challenge is they're public domain books, and the public domain is different from country to country. So that's another thing that needs to be worked out.
Yeah, I think all of these things will hopefully be changing in the next 12 months. But one question, I guess you mentioned EPUB there. There might be some people who are just going, well, you know, what format should I be publishing in? And the other question I have for you is, should authors be rushing to get their backlist out, their work out in ebook format? And are there any specific platforms you recommend?
Well, those are two big questions.
Yeah. Yeah. So some brief answers. I know we haven't got much time.
Okay. The format question, I would say, depends on what kind of book you're publishing. The new format that has kind of been agreed on as a format for the industry is called EPUB. It is a file format that has its roots in HTML. And XML. So it's similar to the kind of technology you would use to create a web page. The tools for normal people to be able to create EPUB files are just now coming out. So EPUB is one you would want to consider. One of the challenges is if you have a lot of diagrams or illustrations or tables, it can be challenging to make your EPUB file look the way you think it should look. Mm. So you may have to alter the format of your book. PDF is great for replicating the way it looks in print. So if you have a highly formatted visual looking book, you probably would want to consider PDF. And in the US, at least, where the Kindle is not conforming to the standard that everyone else is supporting, you would have to go with a Mobi format, which is an older ebook format. Which also is based on some web technologies, but an older version of web technology. But to be able to read the book on a Kindle, you would need to convert to the Mobi format. And there are some tools for doing that. There's a tool called MobiGen. And if you search online, you can find that. And there's a great book on Kindle formatting as well by Joshua Talent. It's called Kindle Formatting. So if you have any interest in creating an ebook for the Kindle, that would be a place to start. In terms of, let's see, the second question was...
Platform, anything you recommend?
Well, we've talked about Smashwords, which is great. Mm. That's a place where you can upload your book, and they call it the meat grinder. You've heard about the meat grinder?
Yes, absolutely.
I don't know how many authors want to put their book into a meat grinder, but it comes out as an ebook in a bunch of different formats. And it's the sort of thing you'd want to experiment with to make sure it looks good in all of the different formats. But it's a way to quickly get your book into a bunch of different formats and into a marketplace where it can be sold without having to sign a long-term contract. And I think they pay 85% of net receipts. So it's very favorable towards authors. So that would be one place to go. You can submit directly to the Kindle store. I'm not sure if you need to be in the United States.
You do. You have to have a U.S. address and a U.S. bank account number. So if you have a friend, if anyone, I publish on the Kindle through a friend. So you can get around it, but you do need that U.S. Residency and bank account.
Mm. Smashwords, I think, is a good starting point. They just announced a deal with Barnes & Noble, I think.
It was Barnes & Noble, yes. Excellent. Yeah. And I just wanted to mention for the listeners as well, Joshua Talent, who you mentioned, and some others have started the ebookarchitects.com site. So they do, you know, if it's too difficult for people, they will help people.
And that might be a great approach if you're planning on selling a fair number of ebooks. The cost is not all that expensive. And I can tell you that Joshua's books look great. And this is the number one concern as a digital publisher that I have, is I see a lot of ebooks that just don't look good. They're not formatted well. There are too many spaces between paragraphs. It looks like it's just a hack job of conversion. So I would encourage authors who are thinking about digital publishing to really think about putting a quality product out. Make sure that it's a pleasurable reading experience, that you put some effort into getting a good conversion done.
No, that's a good tip. There's lots of more questions I want to ask you, but there's one big thing people always asking me, and I spoke somewhere the other night and they asked it again, is if I put my work out there as an ebook, won't people steal it? What about my copyright? Do you have any advice for those people?
Well, you know, the funny thing is J.K. Rowling refuses to release ebooks. So J.K. Rowling has never sold an ebook, and there's never been a Harry Potter ebook release. And yet you can find every single Harry Potter book in an ebook format just by going to Google and searching for Harry Potter ebooks. Scanning technology is such that if you put anything out there, it will be digitized and posted online, unless no one's interested, which is really the worst case scenario. And this gets to the thing Tim O'Reilly has said, which is repeated often by many people who focus on copyright and digital content, is a greater threat than piracy is obscurity. So
yes.
Really, you need to get your work out there. Piracy happens. It's not good. No one's advocating it. But your work could be pirated without even being digitized. And then when you get into the issue of DRM, pretty much every form of DRM has been broken. So that's not going to guarantee you safety of your content. But the other issue is there are all kinds of usability problems with DRM. And it really is assuming that your customers are criminals. The people who are going to steal an ebook are going to steal the ebook one way or another. They're going to find a way to do it. But the paying customers are the ones who usually suffer with DRM. In terms of copyright, you're not giving up any copyright by putting out a digital product. And you have the right to, you know, issue a takedown notice if you find that someone has pirated your work. Mm-hmm. And if you're concerned about that sort of thing, you could be aggressive about searching for your work and doing the takedown notices. Some publishers do that. But really, increasingly, as we see the market shifting towards digital, it's an option you want to be able to give your readers, because increasingly there are readers who prefer digital and won't buy print. And so for those readers, if you don't release an ebook, they're not going to buy your book. They're going to look for something that's available in the format they prefer.
Absolutely. So get it out there. Don't worry about pirating, basically.
Yeah. worry about obscurity.
Yeah, that's what I tell people as well.
You want to avoid.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so I just have a, you know, sort of changing tack a bit. I listened to your interview with Gary Vaynerchuk, which you did earlier this year before I think he went rocket high in sort of, you know, fame, and before he got the 10-book deal with Harper Studio. So I wondered if, you know, as a media consultant, you could comment on how he got that amazing deal and how other authors can learn from that.
Yeah, Gary V was the interview. Is he put out the wine book last year, and his wine book was just coming out, and so this was his first book, and he was, you know, saying it's funny that he's putting out a book because he's not much of a writer.
Yeah, I know.
More of a business person. How Gary V did it is that Gary V is Gary V 24/7. He's the real deal. I mean, it's not an act. That is who he is. He's extremely enthusiastic. He's committed. He's driven. He'll try anything without fear of failure. And if it doesn't work, he'll move on. And if it succeeds, he'll use it. He loves to innovate, and he doesn't give up. It's just, you know, a constant barrage of Gary V. I think we could all learn a lot from, you know, watching what he does. At the same time, not everyone can do that. And if we had a world full of Gary V's, that would That wouldn't work either. global caffeine shortage or something. But Gary is a great model for authors who are looking for ways to use social media to either promote the books they've written or get a book deal. And I think he's proof that it absolutely works. Clearly, Harper Studios saw that Gary had this huge following that continues to grow and that he'd built his own platform. And it's the kind of marketing that publishers traditionally have to pay a lot of money for. And it's kind of built in with when you get Gary Vee, you get his audience is already built in. So obviously that's going to appeal to any publisher who really understands the nature of social media and the internet and the way that these authors or personalities are building relationships with large and growing followings.
No, it's fantastic. And there was another question. He said something interesting. Well, I found it interesting. He said, I don't give a crap about my search engine placement, which, you know, when there are so many courses on SEO and all of that, has social networking and other traffic replaced SEO, do you think?
Well, in some ways, my interpretation of that was that he places more emphasis on the personality or the reputation search than he does on the keyword search. So for him, of course, he wants to rate number one for wine because he's a wine expert. Everyone wants to rate number one for wine. But what do you get when you search for Gary Vaynerchuk, which is a bigger issue? It's like what shows up in your profile when someone searches on your name, what are the top two or three pages of results on Google? What do they look like? What impression do people get of you or your career or your work? I think that was partially about using the various social media tools to build that reputation search so that it presents you in the most appropriate light. Search engine optimization, keyword search, that's all great stuff. Depending on what kind of author you are or what kind of book you're trying to sell, it may or may not get you where you want to be. It may be important to build that kind of reputation search. And that also, as you're saying, with social media, in some ways, people are going to Twitter, for example, to search for a user to see what was said about someone or what they're saying or what the latest information is, instead of going to Google. So that's another place we're seeing that in many instances, social media is replacing some of the functionality or information retrieval that search engines have traditionally provided.
And I think I certainly find on my blog that my traffic comes from Twitter and StumbleUpon as much as it comes from Google. So, you know, things are kind of, you know, well, I don't know whether that's just because my blog is quite new and that's how I promote, but, you know, that's it's interesting.
Well, it's because you use Twitter.
Yeah.
if you weren't on Twitter, you'd see a lot less traffic coming from Twitter.
That's true.
And StumbleUpon is an interesting one because on various blogs that I write for or publish, we'll see some very, very big bursts of traffic come from StumbleUpon, and it comes in kind of waves. And that's sort of an organic thing that can't really be – it's hard to manipulate StumbleUpon. But there are little communities within StumbleUpon where – once you hit that pocket of interest, it'll just like explode for sometimes a couple weeks at a time. That's another example of StumbleUpon as a different form of discovery engine. It's a little bit different than a search engine. It's people telling each other about things that are interesting rather than someone saying, I'll just assume Google knows what I want.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, you know, we're coming towards the end, and I wanted to talk a bit about Quartet Press, which is really exciting, a new digital publishing house, which you're one of the, you know, quartet who are running it. Can you just give us an overview and also what your part of the company is and a bit, you know, what people want to hear about Quartet Press?
Sure. Quartet is, as you said, a new digital publishing startup. We all come from kind of different parts of the industry. We have Don Lin, who was a publisher at Taunton and owned Consortium, which is a large distributor in the U.S. before that. Kat Meyer is a marketing expert, focusing really in the kind of online marketing that you need to promote digital books and has a background in publishing as well. Cassia from Book Square has been commenting on the industry for years and has been tied in with the romance community for years as well. And I'm sort of the digital media web guy, building the platforms that we need for digital workflow and content management and e-commerce. And the idea was, obviously, we're seeing all of these things that we were talking about earlier are happening in the industry. Everything is shifting digital. And it's a different kind of business model, and it's a different kind of opportunity. And I think that the time is, you know, there's a real opportunity for someone to come in with a fresh perspective. It seems like much of the traditional publishing industry has been slow to embrace the new opportunity, or in some cases resisting the new opportunity. So we felt this was our chance to build something original and put some of our principles into practice and really position ourselves to take advantage of this explosion in what we think is going to be an explosion in the move towards digital books in the very near future. So our first imprint is called Quench Romance, and that'll be launching January 5th. And we're working diligently to get everything in place for that launch right now. And then down the road, presumably, there will be other imprints as well, focusing on different genres.
No, that's fantastic. And are you guys open to submission if there's, you know, romance writers listening?
We are absolutely open to submission. You can go to quartetpress.com, and submissions are actually a menu option at the very top of the page. Just click that link, and you'll see our submission policy and information on how to submit your book.
Brilliant. It's such a good opportunity for people. So, yes, we'll be hearing more about Quartet, I'm sure. So you're also part of BookSquare University with Cassia from BookSquare.com. And you have a course which is called Tweet Camp, which I've had a look at and which is brilliant. So why did you pick Twitter? Well, maybe you can talk a bit about BookSquare University and about your first course.
Sure. Well, BookSquare University is, all of these things are kind of connected. They all kind of support each other. We saw that, you know, obviously authors need to be making better use of social media to promote themselves and their work. And frequently, you know, as you know, with your web, with your Author 2.0 blueprint, authors really frequently are just dumbfounded. They're, you know, where do I start? It's this vast world of all of these different tools that, you know, are every time you turn around, there's some new system or service that you're supposed to be signing up for. Twitter has, you know, is another technology that's reached a critical mass and is becoming extremely popular. It's a great networking tool. Even if you don't use it for marketing or promotion, it's a great way to get kind of tied in with the industry or writers in your genre or to meet agents. You can follow experts in the publishing industry who are having discussions about, you know, things that you may not be aware of. It's in many ways, it's part microblog, part newswire, part whatever you want it to be. Every time you turn around, it's like with hashtags and group discussions, people are inventing new ways to use Twitter. And so BookSquare University is focused generally on training opportunities for authors, and we're putting together online workshops to train authors on best practices for using social media. And Tweet Camp was the first course, and that's still online while we prepare our second course on Facebook, which is a problem. And that may actually be, we were joking before the call, that may actually be the name of the course, Facebook is a Problem.
Yeah.
it's so popular, and yet at the same time, no one really wants to deal with it because it's it's ever changing and always challenging. And so that will be the next one that we tackle, hopefully within the next month or two. But obviously, we've got a lot of priorities that we're juggling right now.
I imagine. And will people who, you know, are signed up to a Quartet, will they kind of have to do BookSquare University? You know, will your authors be expected to know all of this stuff and use this technology?
Well, you know, it's not a requirement. We're realistic that, that writers need to be great writers, but we also understand that, that authors need to be taking advantage of these opportunities. We've talked about different ways to work BookSquare University content into, our program as kind of a support tool that we provide for the authors that sign with Vertex. And then CAT is always looking at new opportunities and new ways to market our books and help our authors market themselves. So there will be some sort of probably super secret Quartet author resource that that will take advantage of some of the work we're doing with BookSquare University.
Mm, no, that's fantastic. And one, just almost at the end, but one question about Twitter. Do you think Twitter is now sort of mandatory, you know, in the social media space, or is it still, you know, off to the side a bit?
I was just reading this thing where I guess in the UK, Twitter has passed MySpace in popularity, mm-hmm. which I don't know if that says more about the ascendancy of Twitter or how bad things are with MySpace. People are abandoning for other networks. It's very important that you at least understand what it is and why people use it. And I would say that if you don't want to tweet because for whatever reason it doesn't fit in with your lifestyle or your work style, you should at least be monitoring it to see if people are talking about your book or about you. Mm. It should be part of your reputation search that you do to see, you know, what is out there with your name on it. It certainly would be highly recommended to at least sign up and have an account and tweet from time to time. It's difficult to say that any one thing is mandatory because everyone has a different work style.
Mm.
But it would be in the top two or three things you would want to consider doing. Absolutely.
Right. And where can people find TweetCamp?
BookSquareUniversity.com on the homepage. We have an introductory video and an explanation of what the workshop covers. And you can sign up there.
Excellent. So just finally, so how can people find out more about you and about all your different projects?
Oh, gee.
Because you have a lot of different places on the web.
I have a lot of different places on the web. And originally, kirkbiglione.com was supposed to be the place where everything blended together. But I found out that I'm a really bad meta blogger. So it turns out that Twitter is probably the best place to follow me. If there's something that I'm working on or working with, that's where the news is going to show up. So on Twitter, I'm Kirk Biglione.
Fantastic.
And following me there would be the best thing, I think.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And thanks ever so much for that, Kirk. It was really interesting, and I'm sure everybody learned a lot of stuff.
Great. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me, Joanna.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You can get more information on writing, publishing options, sales, and promotion for your book at www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And you can also get your free How to Be an Author workbook at www.howtobeanauthor.com. See you next time.